A good 10 minutes, two playoff games last night. Both games essentially decided in the third quarter. We'll bring in Cerruti for that epic Detroit-Orlando third quarter, including a 30-3 run by your Detroit Pistons. But we start in OKC. They go up 2-0 on the Phoenix Suns. Chet's third quarter was remarkable. 11 points, 4 blocks. Although on NBA.com this morning, it said it was only 3 blocks. So I don't know, because during the broadcast, they'd give him credit for the fourth block. I thought this was great, because anytime you get to reference Josh Smith, it's a good time. So Chet with 10 or more points, 4 or more blocks in one playoff quarter, the first time that's happened in the postseason since 2008. So, you know, if you look at the palette of things that he was doing, he basically has an and one drive on a smaller player where I think it was a switch. I'm not even sure if it was like by design, like, hey, we want to get Chet the ball and let him cook. He had a three, a flyby three. Although I would say this about defending Chet. He is becoming or has become one of these players that needs to reset himself before he takes a three-point shot. And you're seeing just more and more of this from perimeter players. And look, basically anybody out on the perimeter, because Chet's not a traditional perimeter player when he could essentially be a center. But the shot where it's you catch it, you have an open look, but you need to do something else to get you into your shooting rhythm. And he is now doing it all the time, where it's the catch, it's the up fake. And in this case, it was a drive by, but he had one later where he went out of bounds where he didn't necessarily need it. So I just wonder if there's something there for Phoenix, the coaching staff, to be like, hey, when Chet has a free catch and you're closing out on him, close out to stay in position, because it looks like he wants to reset himself to get into that shot. Cause some guys just are not comfortable shooting off the catch. Some guys aren't comfortable shooting off the dribble, right? There's just different players that can do different things. And that's why like Steph is always the best, because he can literally do any of these things and still feel comfortable taking a shot. There was a time there with Embiid, it was a couple of years ago, where it was incredibly clear, like he was not going to take a three and he would up fake. And everybody went for it for months. And I just couldn't believe that. It was like, hey, this is consistently happening here where he's up faking this three. And then he wants to get deeper. He wants to get to the free throw line and then take that unstoppable pull up jumper. So just something I noticed with Chet, because he hit a great three on a flyby. He also had this off ball cut that was ridiculous, because he sets a screen and then everybody just stops paying attention to him because it's SGA and it's all the other things you have to worry about with OKC. And depending on how the defense is rotated to whatever it is that they're trying to defend, in this case, it's still SGA with the ball, they just completely forget about Chet. Now Chet's cutting and he's cutting down against usually smaller players, because Phoenix is going to be small for at least 28 of the 48 minutes, depending on how they're trying to use their bigs. I don't know that they played 20 minutes of small ball. They actually didn't, because of Oso and Malawach in the minutes. But even if you have one of those guys out of the picture, it means that Chet's finishing against the smaller players. And then the block that he had on Booker, where Booker corrals an offensive rebound, thinks he has a wide open layup, goes to throw up off glass. Chet's like off, he's like out of bounds, and then comes back in and blocks this shot. So just incredible. Booker, his night, not great, but it's just brutal for him. He's facing double teams the entire time. And this is where you can see sometimes like where teams don't want to screen is because they don't want to bring all this extra traffic into the position against the ball handler. In this case with Booker, it's just going to be two of them every single time there's a screen. There even was a time where I think they used Booker on a screen for Jalen Green. And I don't know if it was just what they were running or if they were trying to see what OKC was going to do defensively and see if they'd keep two with the ball against Jalen Green. They did not, because they're just not going to leave Booker. There's no point. So Booker has a few decisions here to make. He took only 7 shot attempts, not on the game, but he was at 7 field goal attempts about halfway through the third quarter. So you can take tougher shots if you want. You could take tougher, quicker shots, because sometimes I think that's what you see in some of these games against really good defensive teams. And we'll get to Orlando's shot selection here momentarily. But it's something Durant's talked about in the past that I always thought was really smart, where once he figures out like how you want to play the ball screen, like he'll decide that, hey, I have to get into my shot immediately before there's any recovery. But it may take me a few times, see what the actions are here a few minutes into the game, and then I'm good. And that's why you want to change this stuff, because the offensive players deciding or he's trying to figure out what he's going to do with the ball based on the different things that he's seen throughout the entire night. Or in the case of Boston Philly game two, you don't change anything. I mean, you just go, hey, it's going to be the same decision for 45 minutes. So only 7 shot attempts through three. Well, yeah, again, 2.5 quarters, so halfway through the third. So as I mentioned, tougher shots are quicker if you want. That's not exactly a solution. You could stop screening for him, which doesn't sound like a ton of fun if Dort is assigned to you. The Oso Iguodaro screens, you could probably stop that, I would suggest. Because when he sets the screen, he doesn't really want to roll and get in the way. When he comes outside, no one cares. Honestly, when he sets the screen, no one cares at all whatever he's doing. It's just he's completely, like, it's justifiable to ignore him. He had a couple plays, I would give it to him, where there's a couple passes there where you're like, all right, you know, he's he's doing something. He's staying active in the play. But for the most part, he's just on that list of guys, like, and it's tough when you're already outmanned. It's like, oh, now we're playing with somebody who can be completely ignored. And then the other thing that I notice is that when Wallace is on him, he's so happy. Booker is just like, okay, I'm ready to go. So I looked at the shots again this morning and tracked him here. 3 against Dort, 1 against AJ Mitchell, 1 against SGA, 1 against Chet. I had 3 miscellaneous. And then there was a stretch where Wallace is assigned to him later in the game, and Booker's going immediately because he's just so happy that he has Wallace against him as opposed to Dort, which, you know, may tell you something about defensive team voting, because I don't know how it's going to play out with all these different guys on the Thunder that you could pick from here. But it was very clear that when Wallace was in, he's like, hey. And a side that is maybe important to almost no one, but when you're tracking, when they show the graphic of like an offensive player and here's what his shot attempts and his field goal attempts and how he's doing against individual defenders, there are some massive liberties in the way this stuff is tracked. Because whenever I look at the shots the next day, it's like you could count that as being a shot against Caruso, but not really. Like, what is it when Caruso is the primary defender, then he gets screened, but then fights his way to get back into the shot, but it's almost like a desperation contest because he's fighting over the screen to try to get back in there. And it usually means somebody else has come up and helped. So is that now the primary defender? So even with these numbers and how I sorted them, I tried to be fair about it on like who was the primary defender. But I see that graphic get thrown up in games all the time, and I just usually assume it's always kind of wrong. Like maybe half the shots are right, the other half are not. I'll stop talking about it now because it's really not that important. Credit to Dylan Brooks for fighting back in this one. There was a drive against Chet where I was kind of like, what is he doing? But the bigger picture thing is that Brooks is out there going like, I know no one wants to drive at Chet, but I'm going to drive at him. And I don't even care if it doesn't go in right now. If he did it 5 times in a row, it didn't work. I don't know that any of us would love it. But I think what that was a sign of was like, I'm going to keep fighting out here. And the problem is Phoenix is outmanned even if they were healthy. But there's no Grayson Allen for the spacing. Gillespie's out there trying, but then he's going to get targeted all over the place. They don't have Mark Williams, which you think would just help a little bit because that means you don't have 20 minutes of Malawach, who was better in game 2 than he was game 1. You could limit the Oso stuff. So Phoenix is basically playing 6 guys because Goodwin, Williams, and Grayson are all out. That's 6 guys with the Malawach minutes. And then they had 7 minutes of Ryan Dunn, who scored 0 points in 16 playoff minutes right now because he's not a shooter. And it's nice that you can have another defensive option there, but it's just going to be so hard to keep up offensively when you have a big no one cares about. And then you throw Ryan Dunn out there, and then it's like, all right, now we've got 2 guys that they're not going to have to guard. So, you know, have fun, Devin Booker. The last thought on this game, I mean, Jalen Green was terrific during the play and stuff. The playoffs have not been terrific for him. He had 4 turnovers in the fourth quarter. And there was a couple times there where they could have gotten it to maybe 11 or 10, and he would end up having a disastrous play. He had a drive where it was a turnover. He had the layup where that ended up being a turnover where it looked like it was going to be an easy 2 points as Phoenix had this really nice momentum after a bad third quarter. He had another drive to Booker where he turned it over. There was another one that I'm not even going to count because it was just so late and the game was kind of over. And there was a moment there where Brooks was cooking and then Green took a really early 3 that he bricked. And I think he was 1-8 from 3 overall. So not great minutes from him. So here we are. Phoenix is down 0-2. They head home. And really the biggest news from this entire series is waiting on the status of Jalen Williams and his hamstring because he was unstoppable in the first half. I think it season high total of points and a half for him. I think 7 of 9 from the floor, and then pulled up lame, left the game. And in this one, even with the late push there from Phoenix, didn't really need him. Detroit, Orlando, the Pistons even this one up. This has been a pro Orlando talent podcast. Maybe not so much the team, but then they blow out Charlotte. They win game one in Detroit. And you're like, man, could the Pistons be in trouble here? Knowing after 6 months of watching this Magic team, you're like, there's probably some terrible offensive games due. Will there be only two of them, or there'll be four of them? You know, is there a chance this series could something weird happen here? And that Orlando offensive dud was delivered express. I mean, they were horrendous last night. And a credit to Detroit's defense, right? So let's just look through some of the stuff that happened. This was a game in the first quarter. It was a game in the first half. And then 2 minutes into the third quarter, it's a 10-0 run. And you're like, all right, let's see how Orlando responds. They did not respond. A 30-3 run. 30-3. Orlando loses the third quarter 38-16, which is actually kind of shocking that it was that good considering you were down 27 points over a period of time. There are a couple things on the checklist. Would Wendell Carter outplay Duren? No, he did not do it again. 3 points and he fouled out. Orlando would be the worst shooting team in the playoffs if it were not for the Houston Rockets' first two games. The offense across the board right now in the playoffs is down dramatically from the regular season, and it's not an officiating thing at all. Think about this. Orlando shot 33% from the floor overall. They were 27% from the floor, 14% from three in the first quarter, and that's the only reason they were down four and in it, because they were shooting free throws. They were plus 6 points in free throws. And then they hung in the second quarter because of Suggs, and Detroit can't hit a three, 0-8 overall. So they're 3-point shooting. Like, you're going, all right, this is just a rock fight here. Buckle up. Let's see who pulls this thing out. And then the third quarter, it's not Cade in his scoring. It's 7 assists and getting a really good, comfortable feel of, once again, Cade getting wherever he wants. It doesn't matter who the defender is because of his size. I was looking at it again after we talked to James Edwards. He's listed at 6'6". That's insane. There's no way. He's got to be 6'8 plus. So Cade is just dicing them all up. I think Duren did a better job of knowing how to play off of it. And Wendell's in foul trouble too throughout the entire time. So that's a problem. Bataze is somebody that they're going to attack. And, you know, this Detroit group had incredible balance in the third quarter, 6 players, 5 or more points. Bane had an awful shooting night. But I would say this, and this is kind of the Booker thing that I was hitting on, is that I can't tell if Orlando takes bad shots because of how great Detroit's defense is, or if Orlando takes just a ton of shots every night. You're like, that's what you went with this early in the shot clock? Like a full sprint, catch, turn, and shot. Like, that's a hard shot for even the great shooters to make. And what happens with Orlando, something that I've noticed, is that when it starts going bad, and think of all the negativity that they're kind of carrying around with them, being like, oh, here we go. Because they've been doing it all year long. Even with the success of the Charlotte game and the Detroit game, like, I don't know that those two games are going to undo the dread that this team must have internally about, like, how bad it's going to go when it goes bad. Because when it goes bad, they just stop doing anything that resembles anything like a team offensively. And on top of it, Cade's killing them. But it's like five guys that decide, I'll fix this, all taking turns, possession after possession. And that's what I see. And for them to have 83 points in an NBA game in 2026, I went through it. It's the lowest point total. The only other game I think was close was 87 points against Toronto. That was late when they lost by, what, 52 points or something? I mean, it was just gross. But yeah, that Orlando offensive dud showed up in a big way. Let's bring in Srudy for a minute or two, just to see how he's doing.
I'm fine.
Yeah, okay.
I'm all right. I mean,
you got the split.
Yeah, I mean, I'm upset about the game, obviously, because, you know, like, they've had these third quarter problems all season long, and, you know, when it goes bad, it goes really bad. I mean, 30-3, that wasn't even the worst run they've had this season. They had a 30-0 run against the Raptors like, what, a month ago? Not even. This is just what this team is. And, you know, I saw, you know, people just being, hey, this is the same team that we saw in the regular season. And it probably is. Like, they're just, the ups and downs are just dumb. And my biggest takeaway, it wasn't his best game, but I fucking love Cade, man. He's so good. He is so good. And like, this is where you get into like, you know, you could disagree on the four best, you know, top six players in Magic having four. Like, Asar had a good game. I don't think Asar is a scrub or anything. But the major difference is like, Cade is just a completely different level of 1A superstar than anything the Magic have. And that's Paolo. And, you know, I thought Paolo was kind of went back to the bad shot selection stuff. Franz.
I thought Paolo was one of the, like, I'm not saying he had a great game, but
he was all right.
He was a lot better than a lot of the other guys that were out there. He still has a few things every night, though, where you're like, hey, you know, it's the playoffs right now, right? So, like, these inbound passes, like, what are you doing?
Right. But, so, you know, it's a split. I'm, you know, I think Magic fans would have easily taken that. We do have some really embarrassing moments this season. I still, you know, I don't think we win the series, but I think, you know, I think this could be a 6-game series. I think the Magic are competitive. They're not a fair 8 seed for this Pistons team to play, but this is why we get frustrated with the team, because they've got these talented guys, and I just don't know. I mean, you've got Jalen Suggs had a really, you know, he was kind of one in the first half, like giving them a lot of energy and. But that's not always the best thing for this team when Jalen Suggs like is feeling himself a little bit, because he kind of like plays a little bit outside of his role, which isn't good, because then it takes the ball out of Paolo's hands or Franz's hands or Bane, who are probably better offensive players. So I don't know. The roster construction is still kind of weird to me. There's a lot of things TBD. But at the end of the day, man, it's a split. We'll take it.
Okay, fair, relaxed assessment of what we have in this series. All right, hit us up at NBAMailbagRR@gmail.com. I think we have one big one that's at least topical that we'll get to today. All right.
Yeah, this is really good, actually, and it's off the Cade discussion. This is from Bo. He says, hey, Ryan Cerruti, of course, the budding superstar Kyle.
Kyle's not on good 10 minutes. I mean, he does the technical stuff. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't even know if he wants to do it. So
he's here. So what's up, Kyle? Bo says, as a Pistons fan / Celtics hater, I wanted to throw a question. This is a long one, so bear with me. I wanted to throw a question theory at you for your top 10 NBA player segment and a weird start to the first round for these matches so far. I'll start off by acknowledging Cade and Tatum have different playing styles, so it's not fair one-to-one comparison, and I am admittedly a Tatum hater. Okay. That being said, I think I have a couple questions I can answer as to why Tatum has never widely been considered a top-tier player thus far in his career, despite his resume and highlights and how lucky the Pistons have been to land a true star. Number one, has Tatum ever played on a team with as little talent as this year's Pistons team? Sure, Durant took a major step this year, but they have an identity on defense, and they could be tough in the regular season. Basically, he's saying like a fully healthy Tatum drags this Pistons team to 60 wins. Number two, how many teammates that Tatum has played with would you say are better than anyone Cade has had on his roster? I legitimately think you talk yourself into 10 to 12 guys with more talent before you would consider taking Jalen Duren. So that's guys that Tatum has played with in career. He thinks there are 10 to 12 guys better before you get to Jalen Duren.
Who are the players?
He said he'll give, he said, hell, I'd give up anything just to have Derek White play with Cade. Okay. Let alone Kyrie, Horford, Brown, Porzingis, Holiday, just to name
Porzingis?
A few. Probably not the one I would name there, but okay. In my opinion, no player in recent history has had an organization more tailor-made for their success of one specific player than Jason Tatum has. When he finally reached his goal of winning an NBA title and finals MVP, it was given to Jaylen Brown. The guy who is responsible for a feel-good Tatum comeback story to be even possible this season is highlighting my point even more. No doubt the Pistons are a year ahead of schedule, and a lot of their regular season success was due to Tatum and Halliburton's injuries coming out of the East. If the Pistons start getting 50% as creative as the Celtics front office has been to surround Cade with some real talent, I believe there will quickly be a time where no one will question who the better player is. Apologies for the long email, Bo from Michigan. I actually think that's a good point. I'm not a Tatum hater at all, but that's my greater point. I think about the Pistons Magic talent thing is, I think this is a Cade thing. This is how good Cade is, in my opinion.
Yeah, there's a lot I agree with in there, so I'm not going to focus on the stuff that I disagree with. I don't know that it's 10 to 12 players. I don't know that I would agree that. I mean, no one would take Porzingis even of last year over Durant. But then this kind of turns into like, which version of Horford are we judging? Are we judging the free agent Horford that showed up in Boston before he went to Philly? You know what I mean? Like, which version of Kyrie is it? I mean, the ultimate, I mean, he was the worst when he was in Boston, even if he's an incredibly talented guy and all that kind of stuff. But let's not get bogged down in all that. Let's talk about perception and how these rankings happen. The reason Tatum is accepted as the better player, but I don't even know that he is necessarily. Like, granted, we had the poll. My vote is my vote. I was still giving Tatum the benefit of the doubt on everything that he's done and where he's kind of lived. You know, that guy who's maybe five, you know, at his peak, it was kind of like here Brunson after the other four guys. And then did you want to put Ant ahead of Tatum? Because he is more fun. You know, Ant's a guy I think we all like watching more. And then it's like, well, how much does that impact all this stuff? Okay, so the Tatum Achilles injury this year, like if he had 3 years where he's hurt, then I start dinging you a little bit more, being like, I can't even count on you. I think that's clearly like the Embiid category right now. It's like, all right, you might be all of these things when you're right, but man, I can't have you ranked ahead of some of these other players, where Cade, after that second year, has been healthy the entire time. So there's probably some stuff there where you could argue it feels like Cade should have been higher because of what they've accomplished this year. But I think there's still some people like me that were giving Tatum the benefit of the doubt because of all this stuff. You also have something that's very simple here. Tatum's already got two finals and he's got the championship. The finals MVP thing is bullshit. I personally think it's a joke that Jaylen Brown won it over Tatum, because Tatum was dictating basically every single thing that they were doing. And there's probably more similarities between Tatum's style of play and Cade's style of play than you would think. Like, if you were like, hey, they're actually kind of similar. And I'm not saying they're identical, right? Because there are a lot of differences too. But Tatum is, when it matters, kind of the guy that gets them going and is setting up their offense, as opposed to this dude where it's like, clear out, let me do everything and score on everybody here. But to kind of like answer the question where this guy is going, where there's a lot I agree with, is that these are just kind of the rules. And if Cade ends up in an NBA finals and the Celtics are eliminated and Cade takes him out, like, you're going to go into next year, because we're going to do this again next November, because that's the whole purpose, is to like see how much the playoffs impact the way they talk about these guys. And sometimes I think that there's too much of a rounding up. Like, I felt like Halliburton's run last year started turning him into a top 10 player when no one had mentioned him as a top 10 player for the entire season. And then it happens. And I'm not even saying necessarily it's wrong, but it's definitely like, if it's 10, it's 10. It's not like, oh, Halliburton's 6 or 7, because I think that would be a little outrageous. The Cade push, like, it's all there. If Detroit gets to the NBA Finals, we'll go into next year with everyone saying that Cade is better than Tatum. And they might all be right. So even though there might be some math in this argument that I would push back on a little bit, the overall point is probably the right one on where I think this is going to go, because you're right, sort of, even two games into this series, it's awesome for him to be on a national stage of like, oh, damn, like, this guy's ridiculous. Like, I think I voted him 5th for MVP. I voted him first team all NBA. So if I'm doing that for this season, like, that 5 to 7 range feels more accurate than putting him down at 9 or 10. And that would mean surpassing Ant. It would mean surpassing Steph. It would mean surpassing Tatum. So I think all these things are actually going to happen, unless they were to get bounced out super early, or, you know, if they go head to head with Boston and Tatum gets it. But that's the kind of stuff that I think can get in the way of like truly ranking who these players are. So I think the Cade Tatum thing is probably going to happen. So
yeah, that's a great point. Like, we'll probably find out. You know, it'd be a fun Eastern Conference Finals matchup if that's what it was. But like, just looking, I mean, the Pistons won 60 games this year, and you know, I think, assuming Tatum's healthy, like, he's like obviously back now, like, the Celtics have way more dudes. The Knicks have way more dudes. I'd say the Cavs have more dudes. Again, I think the Magic have more dudes, and that's why I'm so disappointed in them. If we're just talking about like what one guy brings to a team,
yeah,
and how much value he has, like, that's what I tweeted last night. Like, I am so impressed by what Cade does, all the things that he does for this Pistons team. And he's got a lot of tough guys around him. Like, Big Stu is awesome. And he's got like a lot of like guys who just know their roles well. But like, I was thinking last night, if they had Desmond Bane, they'd be in the finals.
I don't even think it would be a question. Yeah. I mean, I know Bane had a tough one last night, but that's not what we're saying here. If Bane is on the Pistons, and that's why when we had James Edwards on, because he covered the Pistons and now is with the Knicks, and that was on the pod this week, you're sitting here looking at this team going, they still may win the East, but you're like, do they just go, hey, here's 4 picks to the Pelicans for Trey Murphy, and go, give us somebody who, I mean, that's kind of the guy. Mm-hmm. That would be the guy I'd go find. Because like, somebody this offseason was, well, we're not even technically into the offseason, but I was talking with somebody who was like, hey, you think it's like two firsts for Trey? And I went, if Bane's four, then it's four for Trey.
Yeah, I something to think about, you know?
The other thing, too, is that Cade's start was tough, at least perception-wise. Like, Tatum came in and immediately was, like, pretty good. And he plays 80 games on a Celtics team that made it to the Eastern Conference Finals, right? They lost to the Cavs in seven. That was that crazy game where Kyrie didn't show up, and they said it because he was vain and had had some sort of like nasal surgery or some dental thing. And it was like, oh, it's not weird that Kyrie's not here. And it's like, yes, it is. But whatever. That was that one where Tatum dunked on LeBron. That was that series. So that's Tatum's coming out party in the Eastern Conference Finals. And he was immediately really good. There was an advanced metric argument against Cade his first 2 years. You're like, is this guy suck? I didn't think that. But the advanced numbers told you, like, he has horrible numbers, but it's 76 games into his NBA life because he only played 12 games in his second season. So Cade's start started with all this doubt and then missing a season, where Tatum's putting up really good numbers as a rookie, and you can see the talent, and he's playing in the Eastern Conference Finals. So the start of their careers, too, which also speaks to the talent that's around a Tatum versus the talent that's around a Cade, even though I still think that's the most talented 14-win team I'll ever see in my entire life, Monty Williams. But, you know, the way these things play out, if they go head-to-head, I mean, look, there's a way that Tatum outplays Cade, maybe. And, well, honestly, if Detroit's beating anybody, it means Cade's outplaying everyone because of, again, this is a 60-win team that I'm still not sure who their closing five is because they have to figure it out on the fly, like game to game, it feels like.
Yeah. But I think Cade deserves credit for like having the Pistons at 60 wins this season and turning around that team, which was just a mess for a long time. And then even while he was there, we talk about this with quarterbacks, right? Like a lot of teams ruin quarterbacks more than quarterbacks fail, right? And like a lot of players would go into that Pistons team and just be bad because the team and the environment is terrible. Whereas Tatum got the advantage of, and again, I'm not a Tatum hater at all, but like he gets to go to Boston where the team's already good. He's got good management. He's got a good coach. Front office is awesome. Whereas it's kind of like all on Tatum. They give him a terrible coach. He gets hurt early on. Like it's very easy to see the Cade thing going off the rails, and he's just not a player that ever, you know, lives up to the hype. The fact that he is here and has gone through all that, again, that's what James Edwards said in yesterday's pod. Like, that's why I have the ultimate respect for that dude.
Well said. Well said, Cerruti. One of the best points you've ever made. I love Thanks. That. Make that a breakout video. I did do an Ask Me Anything on Threads. So why don't we grab one from that? Because I'm going to be doing a live Threads playoff game coming up here shortly. So I think the problem is I didn't Ask Me Anything on Threads and then didn't answer anything. So that was the whole point, is we were going to kind of do it this way. So maybe I'll do it. Would a deep playoff run mean more to Donovan Mitchell or James Harden? I actually think it's Mitchell at this point. Because Harden, it's only a championship. You know, honestly, if Harden plays really well in the Eastern Conference Finals, although the stakes get raised, and if you have a dud in the NBA Finals, and I hate to say this to you, Cavs fans, but I will say there was something in the fourth quarter that I found a little alarming about his lack of urgency. But I know, I didn't put it in my Monday breakdown, but I went back and watched it again. I was like, hey, kind of just was sort of like out there in the fourth quarter. Does it mean, hey, we know we have these guys, it doesn't really matter. But I watch with a disconcerting eye, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, by the way. I think.
What do you think? You think it's Mitchell? I mean, Mitchell's never gotten out of the second round.
Right. And I think people have kind of made up their minds on Harden one way or another. If the Cavs make the finals this year, like I just how you said the thing about Cade could leap Tatum, and what are we talking about, top 10 next year? Like, we could very easily be talking about Donovan Mitchell in the top 10 if that happens. So I don't think we're talking about that same way with James Harden. If they win a title, it's likely because of I mean, they're not going to, but it's likely because of Mitchell more than Harden. So he's going to get the credit. So I think it's Mitchell.
Yeah. Although it'll be really funny, like if Harden were to have like a really nice playoff run and say they're in the NBA finals, right? Like that's fine. I'm not even talking about like necessarily the championship here. I can't wait to see some of the media members be like, oh, I thought this guy sucked in the playoffs. You're going to be like, what?
I'm just going to.
Like I have spotless mind exercise. Like what is that? So all the other stuff was everybody was wrong for 10 plus years. Just honestly, with Harden, I've always been like, he feels like he's just due to have a really good run. Because even after some of those Clippers games, guys were hitting me up being like, what is wrong with him? I'm like, one of the world's great mysteries. But great first half in game two. But I think Mitchell's the right answer because he's younger. It's more on him. And I think to your point, like, I think the verdict's been in on Harden for a while here. Although
Harden's the I can fix her girl, right? Or I can fix him girl. And it's just like, okay, this is going to end. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'll fix him. And every is team he, is him like, oh, thing? I could. It's like a relationship thing. No. It's like, hey, the girl's like, hey, I could fix this guy. Right. And then it ends in disaster multiple times. And it's because he's kind of just not that dude. Maybe it's a bad analogy. I don't know.
No, it probably is a good analogy. I got thrown off by the who was dating who in the beginning. If you want to hit us up again on Threads and be part of what we're doing there, I'm at Ryan Russillo. So no A in this one. Streamlined for you. Easier to find.
Great profile picture too.
Yeah. Yeah. The old composite back in the day. Senior year. Buttoned up kid. I think my mom made me that tie. A really sentimental dude back in the day. All right. That'll do it for the show today. What's that? Yeah.
Like she wow. Sewing machine.
Material sewed it up. Whole deal. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Don't have it anymore though. Don't know where it is. Pretty sure. All right. That'll do it for the show. Please subscribe to our YouTube page and check us out on the podcast. We'll be recapping more playoff action and again, the first round of the NFL draft. Ryan Russillo Show, Barstool Sports.